And good morning. It is 8:19. I'm Jonathan Reeves. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. And joining us on the phone lines right now, we're talking to U.S. Representative Rick Crawford. Mr. Crawford, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
As you know, this is the 16th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks. As you know, since the attacks, the Department of Homeland Security was established and numerous measures were taken to try to protect America from future attacks. My thought or my question is to you, over these 16 years, how do you think America has done?
Well, you know, we're very resilient. I think it was, a sucker punch if I can use that term. I don't think anybody saw that coming, but the response was, something that we had to do. I mean, this was we can't allow terrorist attacks on our homeland to go unchecked. But what it did was, it not only did it affect us here at home in the United States, it really changed the world. And in that regard, I think from the perspective of these terrorist groups, Al Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, and those legacy entities that continue today, I think they would view, from their perspective, 9/11 as a huge success. But what you've seen is a change in their approach to how they implement attacks since 9/11, they're not slowing down. They've changed their tactics a little bit, but their strategy is still the same, and that is to disrupt those who don't believe the way they believe. And I would say Western targets, but it's not just Western targets. It's anywhere in the world where they think they can carve out a niche and push their influence and their twisted belief system on folks through terrorism. And so they've done it here in the United States. They're doing it elsewhere around the world. And so, we have to be diligent. And that's where the world has changed. And we have to be vigilant in guarding against these threats.
And do you think America has done that, especially as we go forward in the future when it comes to national security? How do you assess that, and especially how we look into the future?
Well, it's an ongoing, every day the situation changes. It's very fluid, and so technology has played a role in how we address, this very dynamic threat matrix that exists around the world, and that's going to continue. So not only are we assessing on a daily basis what's taking place in any given point on the globe at any given time, but we're also assessing how we address it using technology, using a variety of methods through intelligence gathering, whether that be human intelligence or other intelligence gathered through other means. This has to be an ongoing assessment of how we continually guard against this type of activity.
Congressman Crawford, one thing I was wanting to ask you, kind of shift gears for just a second. We were talking off air about, I asked you about the fiscal year. I think the fiscal year starts October 1. That's when the new year starts. And so what's left to be done? I know there's a lot of work for you all in Washington between now and the end of the month. Kind of give us an update on that as to what all needs to be done before we close out the fiscal year.
Well, obviously the recent legislation we just passed that dealt with the debt ceiling and a CR, a continuing resolution to get us through for the next 3 months, gives us a little bit of time to address another pretty pressing issue, that being tax reform. Obviously, that is a centerpiece item for president. That was a pretty important part of his campaign. He continues to be very passionate about that issue. So that's going to hopefully give us an opportunity to focus on that. And but we're going to have to deal with this issue again in the very near future in terms of government funding and the debt ceiling and how those two interact and everything that implies.
Your thoughts on the president and the debt ceiling? I know that Hurricane Harvey relief was kind of tied into that, but what were your thoughts on what he did with the debt ceiling issue?
Well, I'm not sure I understand his tactics or what he thought he was gaining by taking the deal, actually initiating and making the deal with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. These are individuals who have shown really their selfish attitude, and also these are people who have entertained the notion and have encouraged the notion of being disruptive and blocking President Trump at every turn. So I'm not sure, you know, how this is going to pan out. But that's the deal that was made, and it's the deal we have to live with, and it was really the only deal on the table, unfortunately. So, you know, sometimes you just have to play the cards you dealt.
So where, I guess one question is, where do you kind of move forward from here?
I'm sorry?
Where do you kind of move forward from here?
Well, we're going to have to deal with this or address this long term. You know, we're going to, within the next 3 months, we'll probably have to deal with another debt ceiling vote. We'll probably have to deal with a few other issues tied to that. But, you know, the backdrop of all this is that we're $20 trillion plus in debt, and nobody's talking about how we address that. So, you know, people like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are perfectly fine with that. They have no problem at all with debt and deficit spending. And yet our children are going to be left with trillions and trillions and trillions in actual debt, to say nothing of the unfunded liabilities that we have with entitlement programs. And nobody wants to have that conversation. And, you know, so I think at the very least, we ought to be willing to show the American people that we're willing to take a vote on a balanced budget amendment or a spending limitation amendment. I'd be happy to do that, because we need to change the, you know, structurally how Congress spends your money. And in the almost seven years that I've been in Washington, I've got the opportunity to vote on a balanced budget amendment one time in 7 years. And I continually press leadership on this, and I continually vote against budgets on this for that reason, because these budget resolutions don't do anything except create problems politically, because they're non-binding resolutions, don't have any bearing on how we spend money. All they are is a political tool to try and get people to believe that you're going to spend your money this way. And when it comes down to it, here we are with another CR, and here we are with, you know, more debt limit, and nothing being done to change the trajectory. So, you know, if I sound a little frustrated, you probably can understand why.
Yeah, I was about to say, you sound extremely frustrated. But are you also frustrated about the fact, too, that you mentioned Nancy Pelosi and also Chuck Schumer, but in all fairness, there's also Speaker Ryan and also in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, that, you know, you have Republicans in the House and the Senate and the White House. Couldn't something be done there? I mean, because Republicans are controlling everything.
Well, I've had this conversation with Speaker Boehner on numerous occasions. I've had this conversation with Speaker Ryan. I've had this conversation with others in leadership. And I've had this conversation with every budget chairman we've had since I've been in Congress. And here's the thing. At least give us the opportunity. Every one of us up there on the Republican side has campaigned at one time or another for a balanced budget amendment. And yet it's never on the floor to vote for. At the very least, we ought to at least give consideration for having that piece of legislation on the floor. So then we get this nonsense about, well, you know, thinking about a balanced budget amendment, it could require a revenue increase. Well, yeah, it could. So if you've got a problem with the balanced budget amendment because it could require, you know, heaven forbid, a revenue increase, okay, that's fine. Let's do a spending limitation amendment that caps spending as a percentage of GDP. If we could do that, at least we could set a course for some level of fiscal prudence. And yet, you know, even when people acknowledge the fact that that's harder to argue, they still won't allow it on the floor. And so that tells me that there is sort of an institutional bent toward that type of spending that puts us in a position that it's going to be difficult for us to overcome, and so our children are going to have to live with this.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU. Let's talk about the hurricanes. Of course, part of that, we talked about Hurricane Harvey relief. Now there's Hurricane Irma, that caused devastation to parts of Texas, now parts of Florida. Let's talk about that as well. Part of what was signed last week was Hurricane Harvey relief. Did Hurricane Irma relief also come out of that as well, or is that something that'll be a separate measure?
That'll be something separate, and that'll come up fairly soon. But I mean, we were trying to act fairly quickly, obviously, on Harvey, based on what information we had, early assessment. Given that number somewhere in the $160-170 billion range, estimates have since increased. Harvey could be even more costly and more damaging than Irma, even though Irma was projected to be even potentially bigger than Andrew. It's still possible that Harvey could even be more expensive and more damaging than Irma. It still remains to be seen, but we have to be ready for that and prepared. And so, again, we're in a deficit spending mode here and raising the debt ceiling and doing all the things to try and address these people that are having some pretty dire circumstances.
One bit of conversation that's been taking place over the past couple of weeks has been this, and I think this kind of is in a comment from a friend of mine who I have who's been a friend of mine for many years, who also was on Facebook, and this was one post that he put out there that did spark a lot of conversation. The post said this, quote, "Maybe we can invest more on climate change so we can spend less on disaster relief." What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is something that people like to throw out there in the middle of a disaster. There's been an awful lot of money already spent on climate change. But the folks who are advancing that agenda, there'll never, ever be enough money to research climate change to satisfy. And so, probably not the best timing in the world for them to start bringing up that. Particularly since that you can see some of the funding prerogatives and the priorities of the last administration that yielded nothing for the taxpayer, and yet millions and millions and millions of dollars have gone into climate change agenda items, research and development, and all this other kind of stuff, and have yielded nothing. So I think we've spent an awful lot of money on climate change, and now, at this point in time, what we need to think about is how we provide some level of relief to those folks who are suffering in real time at this moment, as opposed to, saying, nah, 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 I told you, we need to spend more money on climate change, particularly given the fact that we've spent a ton of money on climate change already.
I think that what some people are concerned about is, in relation to this, is you have some people who are concerned about, like what happened in Pocahontas in our own backyard, where there were so-called 100-year floods that took place. And it seemed like that we've had, over the past several years, three of those in Pocahontas. I know this is an apples to oranges thing, but still there are some people who are concerned about that. What can we do in relation to these events that just keep happening, that they say, well, this is a 100-year flood or a 100-year situation, and now they're becoming more frequent?
Well, first off, we need to recognize, number one, that the topic of climate change is very nebulous, and the science is far from settled on that. So when folks kind of go forward with this, sort of absolute idea that this is the cause of that, then, I think what they're doing basically is saying we just need to spend more money to further climate change research. Well, look, if you're making these assertions and coming to these conclusions and you're accepting it as fact, then what more money needs to be spent to validate these facts? And the fact is, it's not settled science, number one. Number two, what can we do to address things like that happened in Pocahontas? Well, those flooding instances are largely attributable to some degree to man-made actions. And you know where man-made actions are taking place? further north, upstream, where actions upstream affect us downstream. And so, yes, in that sense, it is man-made. And so if we can do some things upstream with a recognition that everything you do has an impact downstream, then maybe we can get our arms around how we address it. For example, even along the Black River, there's already a statutory authority for a levee district. The problem is the levee district has been inactive, and they haven't done anything to coordinate a comprehensive approach to how they manage flooding on the Black River. So one farmer builds a levee to protect his property over here. Another farmer says, well, I'm going to build it this way, and they're not on the same page. It's not standardized, and they haven't linked up properly to coordinate that. That's going to create some problems. Not only does that create a problem neighbor to neighbor, it creates a problem in that this is not a comprehensive effort that with a common goal in mind of trying to protect not just that area, but how that's being impacted downstream. And so, again, when we see these kinds of efforts taking place on an individual basis, and landowners get frustrated and they say, well, look, the Corps is not moving fast enough, or, you know, the government's not moving fast enough to suit me, and we've got these flood threats, then they're going to do it themselves, and they spend their own money on it. And I get that. But it's not part of a comprehensive plan that allows for the best efficiencies to come of that. And so what we've done as a result of all this is we've gotten together with groups like in the Black River area particularly along the Cache River, where we're seeing this problem from top to bottom. And we're putting together a group of folks to try and come up with a comprehensive plan, starting from the bottom and moving to the top, because it's the folks downstream. As this water moves further south, it gets more and more difficult and stronger and stronger. And the folks down south are the ones, the further downstream you go, the more negative impact you're going to have. And so what we've done is bring folks together from the top to the bottom and said, here's what we need to do to address these problems. And so it's not as if we're not addressing these problems, but we're not just saying, oh, okay, well, let's just throw some money at climate change research and we'll call it good. No, we're actually trying to do some things hands-on in a real impact this in a real way, as opposed to just throwing money at a problem that has yet to yield any solutions.
Thank you for your time. We have run out of time, unfortunately, but thank you for your time, and I appreciate you joining us as always, Mr. Crawford. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU.